welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. You know who I am. I'm Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. So with this episode, we are three-fourths of the way. That makes me kind of sad. Through our String Theories takeover of the Fretboard Journal podcast, this is our month-long experiment where Adam Levy and Ethan Sherman, two incredibly cool guitarists who have a knack for writing a great guitar instruction book, take over the podcast. They talk to some of their peers about New Year's resolutions, and they give us some hints and lessons on ways to think about the fretboard and how we play guitar a little differently. I've truly enjoyed all of these episodes. I think you're going to love this one. I know from your emails that a bunch of you have been appreciating this series as well. It's not too late to get their book if you haven't yet. It's stringtheoriesbook.com, and you can see what all the fuss is about. Before we get to the conversation with Adam and Ethan, a huge thanks to our sponsors, Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar, the incredible vintage instrument store and guitar repair center located right here in Seattle. Follow them on Instagram or Reverb. And then come visit them if you're ever in the Pacific Northwest. You won't want to miss it. You can say hi to me as well. I'm just down the street. Peghead Nation is sponsoring the podcast once again. Such a cool and invaluable guitar, mandolin, and banjo instruction portal. Some of my favorite instructors are on there. You can get your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription with the discount code FRETBOARD when you check out. Isotope, the masterminds behind RX10, are giving you 10% off of your order with the discount code FRET10. If you haven't played with audio repair or mastering software in the last few years, give it a try. You will be floored at all that the Isotope products can do. And last but not least, Stringjoy Strings, who I just saw at the NAMM show last weekend, are offering you all 10% off your first order with the discount code FRETBOARD when you check out. Speaking of NAMM, I just posted some of my highlights and maybe lowlights on the Patreon page for the Fretboard Journal. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. I'm going to be sharing more behind the scenes ramblings and rants and all sorts of good stuff on the Patreon. And our 53rd issue of the Fretboard Journal magazine is now available. Ben Harper, Joanna Sternberg, Kate Wolf's Guitar, The History of the L5. Jazz guitarist Dan Wilson. It's all in there. It's like no other guitar magazine you've ever seen. Trust me when I say that. Subscribe. You will not be disappointed. And last but not least, a quick announcement. We are having a Fretboard Journal meetup at Phoenix's MIM Museum on February 18th, 2024. No coincidence, that is the day that so many famous Gibson F5 mandolins were signed by Lloyd Loar 100 years ago. Roger Siminoff, famed Lloyd Loar expert, is going to be at MIM talking to Fretboard Journal readers. Any of you can attend. You just need to buy a ticket to the museum. Shoot me a note, podcast@fretboardjournal.com, if you want to come. We'll get a tour of the museum. We'll hear from Roger. You can say hi to me if you want. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm also going to be at Wintergrass later that week here in Bellevue, Washington. One of the great bluegrass festivals, we're doing our annual vintage instrument workshop at Wintergrass, like we always do, and I'll be filming that as well. Those are my big updates. Again, this is the third installment of the String Theories Takeover of the Fretboard Journal podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Keep leaving us reviews on Apple Podcasts. Please get the book if you haven't yet. It is revelatory. And thanks from the bottom of my heart to Adam and Ethan for making my life so easy for this month and doing these interviews. It's been a blast.
Well, we are back.
We are. How you doing, Ethan?
I'm good, Adam. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm finally back to almost normal.
You've been a lot of places in the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. I have been a lot of places, all in California. I played a show in LA and then took a little side trip to San Diego with a dear old friend of mine from high school. That wasn't really music related. That was just a trip. And then I went to San Luis Obispo for what I was hoping would be a few quiet days of writing. And I got really sick. I got some sort of phlegm fatale. Oh, no. So I was laid out for a few days and hardly touched the guitar at all because all my joints hurt and just everything hurt. And I was so tired. And then I got better. And then I went to teach at a songwriting camp in Cambria. And then I came home. And this was like, yeah, it was like a 2-week run. And I'm still not at 100%, but I'm back home and I'm back on my routines, back on the Bach.
Nice.
Yeah.
Glad.
How about you?
Things have been good. A mix of frantically busy for like a few days at a stretch and then just like nothing for a few days at a stretch. It's kind of a feast or famine time. Mm-hmm. A little bit. I went to the NAMM show yesterday.
Ah, how was that?
It was wonderful to start and gnarly by the end. You know, as that can be.
Yeah. Joe from Callings sent me a picture of you hanging out with the Callings guys. And that must have been from earlier in the day because you looked pretty fresh and really happy.
My main reason for going was to hang out with them because mm-hmm. we love those guys and we mm-hmm. love what they do. Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful. And they had a ton of new prototype guitars, which were really astounding. And it's just always wonderful to see them and hang.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only times I've been to NAMM before, I was either in college or I was somewhat fresh out and not really like gigging very much yet. So I never had any like legitimate NAMM business, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time I'd been where I could go to a booth and say, hello, I am a working musician. I play with such and such a person. I am interested in your thing. And they're like, oh, hello, nice to meet you. And they're not just like brushing you off because they actually have somebody more important to talk to.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of nice to actually be given the time of day.
Well, let's see. You tour with as a side guy with a major artist that everybody knows and likes, and you're a best-selling Amazon book author, and you make your own records, and at least for this month, you're repping the Fretboard Journal podcast. So yeah, I would think that the dudes at NAMM would be super glad to talk with you.
Man, can I hire you to be my publicist?
Anytime.
It was so wonderful when you were in LA. We recorded that podcast with Mason, which I hope everybody listening to this has heard now. That was so much fun. He really brings the heat.
Yes.
And then that gig that you mentioned, I was there. It was glorious. I know you've been playing trio shows like that with this set of music for quite a while at this point, but that was the first time I had seen you do it in quite a few years, I think, because, you know, obviously we've been hanging out and working together on this and playing a little bit here and there together, but to really see you in the zone with that music, with those guys was really quite inspiring, especially, you know, at a place like 1642, which is such a institution, I feel like, of the Los Angeles musical world that I know.
Yeah.
And it seemed like you were having a lot of fun as well.
Oh, that was some of the most fun I have had playing music in a long time. Yeah, that was a super. So, yeah, what it was, just for people who weren't there or don't know or whatever. I played at 1642. It was that's a a great venue at the heart of the LA music scene. And I was playing with a rhythm section who I don't normally play with, Alan Hampton on bass, who maybe people know from playing with Andrew Bird or
Gretchen Parlato.
Right. And then Griffin Goldsmith, who people probably know from the band Dawes. And the gig started like a year ago, actually. I saw Griffin play with Madison Cunningham at the Ground Up Festival in Miami. And it was one of the first times I'd heard him outside of the context of Dawes. And I was like, wow, I want to find a way to play with him. You know, he's just such a beautiful drummer and musician. And we've just been basically text messaging for the better part of the past year, trying to find some way to make it happen. Anyway, it worked out. And we had a rehearsal that felt pretty good, but it was kind of like a very kind of just kind of breezy rehearsal. Yeah, okay, cool. All right, let's try this one. Let's try that one. Yeah, fine. Okay, cool. Next song. And so I really wasn't prepared for how intense it got at the actual gig, you know, because the rehearsal was really just like kind of an excuse to get together. I think we rehearsed for about 25 minutes and then and then had this beautiful dinner that went on for hours. And I thought, okay, cool. Well, the gig will be all right. And then when we actually started playing the music, everything came together. So yeah, I don't know what'll happen. I really hope to make a record with those guys. That would be the next thing.
That would be super cool. I'd buy that record.
Well, speaking of new records, what's happening with yours?
Oh man. Well, it's called Passages and it's coming out March 8th. And that's the main story. It's all done and ready to go. And I'm just rolling out a little bit of music at a time and hoping people will check it out.
Check it out, people.
Why don't we jump into some more of these New Year's resolutions that our friends sent in? If folks are hearing us do this for the first time, we asked a bunch of guitar players we know to send in musical New Year's resolutions for 2024. And we received an embarrassment of riches. And for the rest of this takeover here, we're going to share those and riff on them and talk about what comes to mind. Before we do, I just want to say to everybody listening, thank you for checking out String Theories. Thank you for buying the book. Thanks for letting us know if you bought the book and if you're enjoying it. We are so, I don't think we've said this yet. We are both so stoked that this book is finding an audience. And if you like it, leave a review on Amazon, because that helps more people who might find something in it, find it. And I think we want it to be a resource that people know about and is available for them. And algorithms be damned, leaving a review on Amazon helps that. So if you bought the book from Amazon and you haven't left us a review, please go do that. It would help us a lot and it would mean a lot and we'd appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Yeah.
I noticed as I was going through these and trying to figure out which one was going to go in which episode, they were sort of split up into two general areas. Some people talked about really specific, concrete things, real nitty gritty musical stuff that they want to work on.
Yeah. What was the James Valentine one about? He wants to learn all the solos.
All the Steely Dan solos.
All the Steely Dan guitar solos. That's so specific. And so
I know.
I love it.
It's so great. So that's kind of one side of it. And then the other side that people sent in were more kind of big picture philosophical things. Everyone we reached out to sent in something very unique and personal to them. So it was really cool to hear what everybody had to offer.
Yeah. It's kind of too late now because we've already released some of these, but it would have been fun to just have like some, either like a voice actor reading them and or some kind of plug in to anonymize. It'd be fun to have people guess, you know, who was resolving what, or have some kind of like Downbeat magazine style blindfold test
where you have to guess which guitar player it is by their resolution.
Yeah,
that's pretty great.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that next year.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Who should we listen to first?
Why don't we start with Harrison Whitford? Harrison is a good friend of mine here in LA. We've played a lot of music together. He is a brilliant guitar player and singer-songwriter, and the wider world probably knows him best because he plays with Phoebe Bridgers. And let's hear what he has to say. Mm-hmm.
Hello, Ethan and Adam. I'm driving my car and I'm thinking about my New Year's resolutions as they pertain to the instrument we know and love. And the main one that I keep coming back to for myself is that I'd like to get in a better habit of organizing the things I play into more compositions. I feel like I sit down a lot at the instrument, and a lot of my quote-unquote practicing that isn't learning a tune or some piece or part of a piece of music is just improvising. And I feel like a lot of ideas happen in that realm, but I don't necessarily always organize them into compositions. And I think I've felt in the past like my process of writing music has to be songs. But I'm trying to get better and be more open to the possibility that maybe I can, you know, start fleshing out instrumental ideas so that those things don't just always exist in a vacuum. So that's really the big one, that I want to do more composing and organizing of the ideas that kind of just happen spontaneously on the instrument. I think I also, another one that I've been thinking about is being a little more intentional or macro about what I am working on, like keeping kind of a visual idea in my head of like, okay, I've been working on this, and or I've been working on learning this solo, so now let me supplement that with the tune, and I've been working on this arrangement, so let me supplement that with just improvising for a while, like maybe being a little more conscious of everything that I'm taking in and the way I'm putting that back out, if that makes sense. So yeah, I guess broadly being a little more conscious and intentional about what I'm working on. And then another personal resolution that's very specific to myself is maybe finding a way that music and photography could work together, maybe instrumental guitar pieces that could complement and be complemented by a series of pictures. You know, Anthony Wilson's done this in a really amazing way, and so that's kind of a goalpost and an inspiration there. But that's the those are the main ones I keep returning to.
Cool.
Yeah, Harrison.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, with the photography aspect, that was something that we didn't say at the top when you were talking about who Harrison is. He's also a really a wonderful photographer. And he mentioned Anthony Wilson, who's also a guitarist and photographer. And yeah, I think finding a way to combine two really different art forms, you know, sound and vision. I'll be interested to see where he goes with that, because I believe he will follow through and find a way to bring those together. I take pictures. I'm way, way, way more amateur about picture taking than he or Anthony Wilson, but I get anyway the compulsion to, or the notion to want to mix those up, and yeah, it's exciting. And then with the other ideas of framing, being real specific about what you work on and how to focus it, I love that idea. And also just gathering the little nuggets that come up when you improvise and trying to cultivate them into larger pieces and not just taking them for granted as, oh, it's just a little nugget, I'll have another one tomorrow, but actually like making something of it. Because I think sometimes I wait around for like what's a really good idea, whereas, you know, there's always some idea available at any moment just from improvising, and you can get in a good habit of turning any idea into something bigger and making it better.
Yeah, it's almost beside the point whether it's good or not.
Right.
It kind of doesn't matter if the point is actually just to shape it into something more.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, I love Harrison's playing, and he's always posting these little improvised nuggets either on Instagram or like we'll send stuff back and forth to each other that we're working on. And it's pretty amazing to see what can just sort of pour out of him without seemingly any thought. It's already pretty frightening. And I know he has a real deep sense of form and craftsmanship. So to see that kind of combined with what his intuition already does, I think, you know, as a friend and a fan, I'm very excited to see where that goes for him.
Hmm.
Nathaniel Murphy is up next.
Oh, cool. Nathaniel, if people don't know him, is a guitar, incredible solo guitarist, and is also working at Chicago Music Exchange. I think that's how I found him, through some of their videos and then lots of his own videos. And we're providing links to all these folks, right?
Yeah.
Let's hear what he has to say.
So my New Year's resolution for my guitar playing is going to be not to be too harsh on myself, you know, in terms of my performance. Obviously, I strive for perfection, as we all kind of do, but it's all right to have little imperfections. You know, it can be a bit of a mental battle at times, thinking, oh, that could have been better, this could have been better, but little imperfections are okay. Like the guitar heroes I grew up, you know, listening to, they had little imperfections in their playing, so I can have some in mine too.
Yeah, sure can. When you've listened to something enough times and you kind of have a mental image of it, it can be easy or seductive or like our brains can kind of turn it into something different than it is just based on our perception of it and time. So it's often interesting to come back and hear something that you thought you've heard a million times and go, wow, that's like way, you know, in this case, it's way more imperfect than I thought it was, which is then freeing for us because we don't, it takes away that burden of thinking we have to measure up to some impossible standard that really we actually just created in our minds.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's using more words to say what he said more clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved how, I mean, it was very concise. If people don't know Nathaniel's playing, I mean, just for context, he is somebody who does these kind of multi-layered solo arrangements that are like somewhere between Tommy Emmanuel and Tuck Andress. So obviously lots of work goes into working up those kind of arrangements, and I could see where perfectionism could really be a force of, you know, milling and polishing that stuff. But yeah, if you go back and listen to a lot of, I would be curious to ask Nathaniel who those players are that he was thinking about when he talked about, you know, the players that he grew up with. But for sure, like this morning I was listening to a Traffic record and listening to the way Steve Winwood plays guitar. And it's not perfect, but it's perfect.
Totally. When I was in college, my friends and I would always talk about Jimmy Page as like the shining example of that on Led Zeppelin records, you know, like so masterful in his thing, but also like kind of a sloppy mess. And like, that's what made it great.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jimmy Page, if you're listening, but we love you just the same.
Of course. Of course. Okay, who's up next?
Mary Halverson.
Oh, hey, Mary.
If you don't know Mary Halverson, you should. She's a brilliant guitarist and composer based in New York. And I believe she's a MacArthur genius. Is that correct?
I think that's correct. So how does a genius practice the guitar? That's what
how does a genius practice the guitar?
Well, let's see what she says.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, it's Mary Halverson. You asked about my New Year's resolution. As far as guitar goes, this is probably twofold. The first one being the same one I make every year, which is get better at the guitar. but within that, you know, finding specifics and what are the holes in my playing and how can I work on them? So right now I'm working on sight reading chords, getting better at sight reading chords. And I'm going through these Van Epps books, Harmonic Mechanisms for Guitar, which are really great. Kind of chipping away at that.
Man, I've always wanted to go deep on those Van Epps books. I've thumbed through them. And there is so much there.
Yeah. Yeah. If people don't know these books, they're called Harmonic Mechanisms. I think Harmonic Mechanisms for Guitar. And there's three volumes and each one is, you know, an inch and a half thick or something like that. That's cool. If you hear Mary play, you might not guess that she's working on, in a sort of, I don't want to say George Van Epps is conventional, but it's interesting to me that, like, because her own music is so adventurous and, you know, George Van Epps was a guitarist who came out of, you know, playing banjo in the 30s and progressed to this solo guitar style that was contrapuntal, which is very bold and forward looking, but, you know, relative to what Mary Halverson's records sound like, it's, you know, of a different era. And it's really inspiring to think that, you know, working on kind of nuts and bolts stuff like that is what gets Mary to the guitar, you know, every day. That's cool to hear.
Super inspiring. Up next, we have Ronan DeLille. Ronan is a friend of mine here in LA who I've been playing duo a lot with recently. He's a brilliant jazz guitar player, among other things, sings and writes his own songs, amazing recording engineer. He's got a record out called Heavyweights in the Ring. That's really, really cool.
Okay, so a New Year's resolution for the guitar. I think that would be to create some distance between the identity and the label of being a guitarist, and to lose for as long as possible any sense of expectation or duty or responsibility to adhere to a style or convention, and just spend as much time just following sound at the guitar and exploring what I really want to do and what I really want to hear without these voices in my head telling me that I need to do this or that. I think that would be mine. Thanks, Adam, and thanks, Ethan, for asking me to share. And Happy New Year to all you guitar players out there.
Yeah, Ronan. Super cool. I can definitely relate to that feeling of imaginary voices in your head telling you that, like, this is what it means to be a guitar player. This is the quote-unquote right way to do it. And if you're not doing that, what are you doing? And he rightfully points out that, you know, a lot of the time that is just a noise. And everybody's path is so different. I mentioned, I think, the first time we recorded one of these, that listening to what people brought in, I was struck by this sense that a lot of the time people were saying they'd like to be doing things that I was under the impression, knowing them, that they already did. It's not like they weren't doing those things. And I definitely think of Ronan as somebody who is really committed to his own artistic vision as a musician.
Yeah, that's great. I want to go back and listen to that one again, maybe transcribe it even. I definitely fall victim to practicing the stuff that I think I'm supposed to practice or should practice. And yet I find myself intrigued. For some reason, Jim Keltner's name has been coming up a lot lately in conversations. And people always point out, you know, certain recordings where he plays like the least expected thing on the drums, and yet it totally makes the track, or in the case of a live show, totally makes the song, you know, on stage. And I keep thinking about, you know, is it possible on the guitar to not play the thing that it seems like you should play, and yet at the same time deliver something that's just right for the recording or the live performance or whatever, like searching for something else to do or say that's just right.
Yeah. How can both of those things be true?
Right. I don't know, but I keep thinking about it.
That's pretty cool. I remember talking to Bill Frisell about drummers once, and he said people always thought of Paul Motion as this, like, quote, weird drummer, unquote, but he had nothing on Jim Keltner for weird. I want to bring in Grant Gordy.
Oh, yeah, Grant.
Here he is.
This is Grant Gordy beaming in from my apartment in Brooklyn, New York. And looking out the window, watching it begin to snow a little bit, which feels appropriate since it's January. And I'm thinking about my goals for this upcoming year for my guitar playing. And, you know, I think they're a little bit always the same, although, you know, this is the time to sort of reset and give things a little bit of thought. And two major things that come to mind are learning tunes. I want to learn a lot more tunes this year. I've already started on that path so far this year. I've learned working on a Monk tune and a Billy Strayhorn tune, which, I mean, even the idea of knowing a tune fully is kind of elusive, because what does it even mean to really have a tune under your fingers? There's always deeper levels to go. But the point is learning more tunes and working on more tunes. That's an important goal for me. And another one that comes to mind is doing a lot more writing, and specifically writing hopefully for different kinds of contexts, meaning different sets of instruments maybe than what I'm accustomed to. I think I'm pretty comfortable with writing in like a string band context, meaning, you know, kind of acoustic guitar, violin, bass, or fiddle, you know, bass, mandolin, that kind of thing. But of course, I like to play with all different kinds of ensembles, and the chance to work with different textures and different personalities and that kind of thing can always be a great spur or impetus to try new sounds, or maybe think myself out of some corners that I might have unwittingly painted myself into. So those are a couple things. They're less about any kind of technical proficiency, although I think there's just naturally a lot of technical challenge built into both of those things of trying to think in terms of ensemble playing, you know, is going to make me think about my approach, you know, be really conscientious about my approach to the instrument. And yeah, learning new tunes is always a big technical push, no matter what it is. So those are my New Year's goals for now.
Oh, I love it. Grant is so inspiring to me.
Say more, Ethan.
Well, he is somebody who my perception of him is somebody who is equally comfortable in both like an acoustic string band context and in playing, you know, electric music out of the jazz tradition with drummers and horn players and that whole kind of world. When I listen to him in both of those contexts, I hear somebody who really kind of has a real deep sense of comfort and rootedness in both of those traditions, and has kind of found his voice and is committed to continuing on the path in both of those worlds. And like, also like, yeah, what does it mean to really learn a tune? Can you ever truly know a tune?
No, I mean, yes, in that you can go out in the world and play it or record it. And maybe that's the bar. Like, well, I played it, I recorded it, I performed it with people or by myself or whatever. But you can always go back to it and spend more time with it.
Totally. And can I just piggyback off that for a second? I think kind of tying this back to what Ronan said about trying to lose this sense of duty or responsibility. I think when you're studying a jazz standard or you know, playing a gig where you're playing music in that tradition, I can sometimes feel this weight of that tradition of like, well, if I'm going to play All the Things You Are in 2024, it has to be the ultimate expression of what is possible for All the Things You Are. Otherwise it's not worth it, because it's all already been done before. And that's not true.
Not at all.
Do you know the melody? Do you know you know, chords that go with it. Can't, like, if I can sit across from you and we can get from the beginning to the end of the song and have a good time, that's cool. Like, yes, you can always go deeper, but don't let the feeling of needing to go deeper stop you from doing something where you already are.
Yes. And now I'm going to piggyback and say, don't let the weight of where a song has been stop you from saying something. I really don't think you need to know every recorded version of All the Things You Are
and every possible harmonization
to say something with it that's yours. I mean, you can do that, and it's respectful to the music and the history to do that. But if the weight of that stops you from even trying, then yeah, you have to let that go.
Especially if your ultimate goal is just to play music with other people.
That's exactly, I think that's the big idea.
You said what I was trying to say. We got one more here.
I just wanted to mention, actually, that Fretboard Journal's YouTube channel is how I found Grant Gordy in the first place. He has a great rendition of Prelude to a Kiss, the Duke Ellington ballad, that if people haven't seen, they should definitely check out. So shout out to the Fretboard Journal YouTube channel as a discovery engine.
Oh, absolutely. I've discovered, you know, so much that way. Yeah, and Grant's got a really beautiful record that came out last year called Peripheral Visions. Mm-hmm. A really adventurous and exciting and melodic, and I'm not a good, you know, I wasn't meant to be a record reviewer, but I love this record, and I think if you like music, you'll like this record. And if you like instrumental music, if you like string band music, there's a lot there for you. One more of these, okay, before we sign off until next time. Bill Frisell, here we go.
Music is incredible, the most wonderful world, and my guitar is my way into it. All I have to do is pick it up and we're off. That sounds simple, but sometimes I get scared. I'm afraid. I'm overwhelmed by what's out there. It's too big. I'll put things off, check my email, wash the dishes, look at Instagram. I keep circling around when I should just pick up the instrument. It never lets me down. You'd think I'd know by now. I mean, I've been playing for like 60 years. It always takes me to a better place. I always learn something, makes me feel better. So my resolution would be to just stop messing around and get on with it. Explore, just keep going. My hero, Sonny Rollins, says, practice and try to live by the golden rule. I like that.
Thanks, Bill. That was great.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
If even he gets distracted by Instagram, then I'm not going to beat myself up about getting distracted by Instagram.
Same. Yeah, that's, yeah, it brings it all back home. Wow, this is a juicy episode. Like Ronan and Mary Halverson and Bill Frisell and Grant Gordy.
Wait until next week.
This has just been...
We got more where this came from.
Oh, man. Well, I can hardly wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And thanks again to Jason Verlinde and the Fretboard Journal for having us just leaving the keys under the mat for us.
And such an exercise of trust on Jason's part. I hope we're living up to it.
I hope so, man. Well, Ethan,
I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week. Take good care, man.
Take it easy.
All right, that was installment 3 of the String Theories Takeover. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I've loved these. It's so cool to be a fly on the wall and hear two musicians talk to each other. I hope you agree. We've got one more installment left before I return to our regularly scheduled programming. Thanks to everybody, as always, for tuning in.